You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We have a great conversation today ahead of us. I want to introduce Ryan Weiss, the founder and president of Effective Performance Strategies. So welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405, Ryan.
Thanks for having me on, Will. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about when you talk about effective performance strategies, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so I think a big part of where this came from is, I spent about 17 years in a big multinational company and moving all over the world and observing processes and observing how people interact with processes. And so what it really means to me is looking at the ways that that folks bring their processes together, that they align their processes together and focus on doing the right things. And what I find is that by doing that, people can really develop very effective strategies to help their business perform. So that's really where we came up with the idea of effective performance strategies.
So you're talking about processes, right?
So exactly. So we are very focused on process. And, one of the things that, I often tell people, my background, I got my degrees in chemistry and finance. I'm a very process focused person. It can get very boring very quickly. But, when I first got into my first role out of university and started working with people, started focusing on process, I very quickly realized that the world's problems can't be solved with process alone. You got to have people interacting with process, which is really the habits, right? These are the habits that people have, how they interact with the process that, whether it's, at a retail outlet or whether it's at their work, people plus process is really a habit cycle, right? How do people do that? And so even though we focus primarily on process, we really understand that, if we don't make effective processes, right? If we don't make it the processes in a way that people can follow them, that are intuitive, that are aligned, then it's not very effective at all. And so we don't want to be too technical about processes, but we want to make sure that we're aligning people and engaging people.
Well, and then a lot of the small to medium sized businesses, sometimes they're doing things off the seat of their pants, right? That's their process. That's their system. It's just, this is the way we do it. Or we've done it this way all the time. Or, well, Joe over there or Mary, they've been doing this for a long time and they know how to do it. We don't have to write that process down. We've got Joe and Mary. We become very vulnerable as a company, don't we?
That's right. Yeah, there's a vulnerability, a risk that if Joe or Mary decides to move on, they retire, right? They, things like that. When that happens, because it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. If that person's processes aren't documented, aren't repeatable, if they aren't scalable, if your organization grows rapidly, and you just have Mary who does that all the time, Mary needs to go on vacation sometimes. And Mary might need an assistant to help do that. And so that's where process really comes in.
And another issue that I often find is that if we write them down, then very often we can clarify what it is we're doing and we can make it better.
That's right. Yeah. So this is one of the things that, and I find it often with the founders of companies that everything's in their head, right? When you first start a company, a small business, every customer's name, every transaction that happens, every piece of equipment that you have. But as the organization grows, and especially we see it with, when the second generation takes over, third generation, that all that knowledge isn't just in the head of the founder. And so writing it down really enables us to clearly articulate what it is we're talking about and share it with other people in a way that can be verbalized and understood.
What I've experienced is that people at the top will sit together and create the process and then go out and try to tell other people what to do. The real experts are the people on the floor, right? Or in the field.
That's right. And this is one of the things that I am absolutely very passionate about. In one of my roles in that multinational company, I managed a shared service center in the Philippines. The company moved me over there, and I had 180 people with computers, and we had these, you know, very high level processes and, you know, things that people were supposed to do. But what I learned very quickly by looking out at the sea of computers was that they were the ones who knew what was going on. And so I would start challenging them with questions, right? I asked each of the managers to give me a quality metric, a value metric, and a timeliness or speed type metric. And at first they, you know, were like, well, what are you talking about, right? We have lots of metrics that we're supposed to. No, I said, no, I want the managers of each of your departments to tell me about it and then to tell me about the process, because, you know, it's the people who are doing the process understand the pain that they have every day. They understand what's working. They understand what's not working. And the theoretical stuff we do on a whiteboard in a management office often doesn't represent what actually happens when the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, I mean, that whole notion of somebody else coming up with the process and then telling the people in the field or on the floor that they really don't know what they're doing, they have to do it this way. Involving them at the very beginning with the process of designing that process seems to me, do you think that's helpful?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a little bit of a history buff, and there was a time back after September 11th when we weren't flying all over anymore. I was driving from Kansas City to Indianapolis, listening to a book on CD at the time. It was about the history of the American Revolutionary War. And the thing that occurred to me as they were talking about taxation without representation is that started a war, right? That started many wars, actually, probably throughout history, but very relevant in America. And if that starts a war, then for sure it's going to stop any project that I ever lead in my career. And I believe that taxation without representation is not just about money, but it's also about the, you know, you're going to disrupt my process. You're going to tell me what to do. You're going to tell me how to do it. And you haven't even come out here and asked my opinion. That's the, you know, that's the core of taxation without representation.
And that's not just my opinion. That's ask me what I have learned, that what's successful, what I've learned is not successful, effective, not effective, helping, you know, coming in and asking me, not discounting me, makes a huge difference.
Oh, absolutely. And the people who are closest to the process, they know what the pain is. They know what the pain they experience is. They know what the pain the customers experience is. And they're the ones you want to engage in these discussions to really understand it and be able to articulate it and train new people. And right, how do we do these things?
One of the things that I have been toying with in the last 6 months is this whole notion of, once I am really clear about where I want to go, my leadership team and I, if I'm the owner, when we are really clear, we're 100% in agreement with where we're going and how we're going to get there, then something happens, right? When we just know where we're going, we don't have to know all the hows right now, do we?
That's right. One of the things I learned, I had a client a few years ago ask me to modernize something called training within industry. This was from the 1940s, the Rosie the Riveter stuff. And it was really interesting as I started reading and researching about this. And there was some good stuff that, you know, core foundational stuff in terms of process and in terms of how to communicate that really built a solid foundation for a lot of what my organization does today. And kind of what I'm getting to there is, they actually had the five W's and an H, those questions: why, what, where, when, who, and how. And they asked them in a specific order. There is actually a specific sequence, and the how was at the bottom of the list. And one of the things I observe in companies from small to large is that often when they start going down this path of documenting a process, they talk about how to do it. And they miss the most important question is, why do we need to do this, right? And that brings alignment, right? That answering the question, why do we need to do this? Why is this important? Sets the foundation, the context, and really helps organizations to align and move forward. And I think that's absolutely a powerful thing.
Yeah, I think that getting really clear, it's sort of like when I go out to my car, get in it, and either use my phone or the GPS in the car. The first thing I have to do is be crystal clear about where I want to go. I mean, I could say, well, I want to go to the West Coast. I could say, I want to go to California. I could say, I want to go to Greater Los Angeles. I could say, I want to go to 280 Cliff Drive, apartment number 3 in Laguna Beach. And that's very clear.
Right.
Once I get really clear about that and put it into the GPS, I don't have to ask how. It's already done, right?
That's right.
But what I do have to do is I have to put it in gear. I have to take the risk and back out of that parking place and go to the right or go to the left. And what's interesting is when I am doing that, if I go to the right, the GPS will either say, yep, that's good, keep going, or, well, I'm going to recalibrate so that you can get there. And it's going to get me to the place I want to go. So getting really clear about about where we want to go, to me, that's going to generate the how.
Absolutely. And I think this is why I'm so passionate about what we do, and I have so much fun with it, is that, you know, organizations, and I just had one this past week that just signed up with us that was already, they were trying to put their processes into a software program, but they hadn't even taken a step back to say, where are we going? And which would enable them to be much more successful in doing this. So they had already started with the how, and the context was just missing. And so that's where, you know, I feel that the alignment of leadership teams, the alignment even of, you know, the supervisors on a shop floor, if it's in manufacturing, for example, that alignment is so critical of where are we going. And then we understand the context of what are these, you know, standard operating procedures, or what is this process that we're supposed to be following? Without where are we going, none of it makes sense. I just start reading procedures and it just doesn't make sense.
Right, right. Well, that's what, so tell us a little bit about your clients. Who are your typical clients? Who do you work best with?
Yeah, so we've found, so coming out of, you know, through the pandemic and coming out of it, we have found a lot of success with small to mid-sized companies that are, you know, they've got to have a level of a size that's sort of big enough where they're starting to feel that pain, that the handoffs between departments, they're scaling up and they're, you know, seeing that we're hiring new employees and Joe just trained Teresa and, but he trained her different than Sam trained Jill, right? And that type of dynamic, as organizations grow, they find that there's more and more sort of diversity of how their processes are working, and that starts to create additional pain for them to prohibit scalability. So I would say organizations, what we found is, oftentimes it's, you know, second and third generation businesses where they've grown to a certain point and they've realized that to scale further, we need to have clarity of processes. Or it's the other kind of key situation we find is just rapidly growing organizations that don't have standards in place and don't have sort of processes. It's all in somebody's head, but they're hiring all these people and just, they don't know, you know, nobody knows what to do or where to go.
It's sort of like, well, we'll get with that. We'll take care of that later.
That's right.
Take care of that later. And then later creates all the fires and the disappointments and the obstacles and the barriers because we're not agreeing on what our processes are.
That's right. That's right.
Well, tell us some stories about success, and maybe you can slip in a story about where it didn't work.
Yeah. So, you know, when we look at the places where this has been really successful, it's when the senior leadership of an organization really believes that they have this pain. And the so one of the examples I would give is a client out in West Virginia. I actually went out there quite a bit over the course of a couple of years, and it was a facility where they were really struggling to have that engagement between management and the employees. And in fact, there was a day when I went out there, and one of the employees came up to me and he said, "I know why you're here." And I said, "You know, why is that?" And he said, "You're here to tell us to move this piece of equipment over to this area over here." And I said, "I'm not sure who told you that, right? But that's not at all what I'm here for, right?" I said, you know, I asked him the question, "Do you think I'm coming next week to run this piece of equipment, to run this machinery?" And he said, "Well, no." And I said, "Well, then why would I care where you move the equipment to, where you move this, you know, to?" And the strange thing was, by the end of the week, that team that we were working with, they said, "You know what? We actually want to move it over there. That's actually a better place for it." Uh-huh. And I had to resist, right? I was resisting because, you know, I said, you know, if I walk out of this building and you guys say, "Oh, Ryan told us to move it over there," that's not going to work, right? You guys accused me of this before we came in. But this was about engaging the people who run the machine every day and, you know, make these things work. And so that, you know, that's one of the examples. I think my time in the Philippines, when I mentioned, you know, working with 180 people with computers, a very transactional environment, and looking out and realizing there was no way that I was ever going to know every single person's process. But one of the things we did that turned out to be sort of really fun and engaging was we set up one of our conference rooms where each of the teams put their process up on a wall. They just put a simple process on the wall, and they started taking yarn. They were taping yarn from one person's to the next, and they were starting to make all the connections between all of their processes with each other. And every week, one of them would present about the process, and it was literally standing room only in this conference room, because they were having so much fun learning about process and linkages between each other. You know, those are some examples of where it's really fun, right? And it really works. I'll give you an example, an event that we held just a couple of years ago that we had a lot of resistance. There were folks in the room who just were not interested at all in, and they felt that management was just pushing it down their throats, that you've got to do this way. And they didn't feel represented, right? They didn't feel like they had an input in the right way to do it. And that one, that one was still painful for me. that was in Indiana, and I'll never forget that week of my life.
Well, you must have a process for engaging a company.
Yeah, absolutely. So the process that we typically go through with organizations is when we get started, we like to have about a 60-minute meeting with a couple of the key stakeholders, a couple of the people who are the decision makers, to talk through, you know, a little bit about us, a little bit about them, and you know, ask that question: is there a fit between our organizations? Is this, you know, what you're looking for? We ask some questions about a couple specific questions. What pain do you experience when people don't follow your process? And the second one, what pain does it cause your organization when your process breaks down? And you know, if people are able to sort of answer those questions and start to see the pain that's happening, then it typically turns into a pretty good fit. Then we work into a series of virtual workshops where we start with a very high level process snapshot in the first workshop, and that includes the key metrics, the value, quality, and timeliness, right? A metric around each of those. And we say, here's a one-page snapshot of your core process. So by the time they get done with that first workshop, they've got that. The second workshop, we get into a bit more detail. And by the third workshop, they're well on their way to having a very clearly aligned process. And we like to include the key stakeholders. After that first meeting, we start to identify who are the key stakeholders who need to be on, you know, in that series of workshops, because if it's just two or three of us on the call, we can get through it very quickly. But that's the taxation without representation thing that we come back to.
So you can help somebody learn how to create their own processes in three sessions.
That's right. So, the how to create is, you know, very high level, and then a more detailed view underneath that. But we don't just start, you know, step one, step two, step three, because, we start to get lost in the weeds and forget the context of what we're talking about. So, yeah, right. In those three sessions, we're very passionate about training, not just doing, because, as when we leave a session, we're not coming back to do the work next week, right? We're facilitating that alignment, and the people who need to do the process need to be engaged in it, successful and sustainable.
Well, in EOS, there's two tools that we use in that process component. And one of them is documentation, which is what you're talking about, right? We want to document all our core processes. And then the second is we want them to be followed by all. To me, that means after we have the key stakeholders from each of those processes involved in talking about how to do it, getting it down on paper, documenting it, then we need to go out and train so that we all know exactly what to do, what's the most effective, best way to do it all the time. And then we got to monitor that, right? And then in monitoring it, inevitably, we're going to find there's some things we maybe overlooked in putting the process together. We might want to change that, or it might be that we need to go back and retrain. And so that happens periodically. Now, do you suggest that companies go back and revisit their processes annually?
That's right. Yeah. So typically we like to do a quarterly review and just say, you know, and it doesn't have to be a super deep dive every quarter, but just make sure that we still have some alignment, that plan, do, check, adjust cycle is happening. And then on an annual basis, sort of looking, doing a deeper dive and understanding, you know, is there something that we're missing, right? How are things going? Let's look at those metrics and really make sure the alignment is still there. So absolutely, right? This is not this is not just once and done, but we like to train the people that we're working with so they can do it themselves if they like, right? We're there if they need us, but if they don't need us, if we've trained them well enough, then we consider that a great success as well.
Well, so talk about your business, putting your business together. What have been some of the successful things that you've learned, and what are some of the obstacles in starting and continuing and growing your business?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I started my first business when I was 16 years old. I started a lawn care company, right? And it's actually how I paid my way through college. I built it up to a pretty good sized little company. And my youngest brother still runs it today in the Chicagoland area. He's grown it into a pretty sizable organization. He's got a couple of buildings and, so he took it and really ran with it. And it says on his website, I think, that he started it in 1993. And I say, Craig, you were only 6 years old at the time, right? But I went from there. I went and went into the corporate world, right? I told you I got my degrees in chemistry and finance and worked for a big company, moved seven times in 17 years to Asia and back a couple of times. Before I put up the white flag, my wife and I said, you know, it's time to come back home, to be back by family. And so you know, over the past 5 years, one of the images that I'll never forget, I saw, you know, somebody had this little sawtooth pattern that was going up and to the right, and it said, said hoping for a positive slope. And when you start your own company, right, when you start your own organization, there are days that it's amazing and there are days when it's tough, right? And I would say the biggest success thing has been creating simplicity. When I go back, you know, in the corporate world, I was, you know, there's a lot of complexity and, you know, data analytics and data is good and it's important. There was a lot of, you know, process and, you know, politics and things like that. And you have to be aware of all those things, but getting it to a simple way, getting things into a simple way where you can create context and foundation and clarity, that has been the most successful thing in terms of the growth of my organization.
That's interesting. In our first session with leadership teams for EOS, we talked to them about that, about what you're talking about, that up and down, that we're hitting, you know, business doesn't grow in a slope like that. Right. Kids don't grow in a slope like that. It's always these revolutions. It's not evolution. It's a revolution. You hit the ceiling and you either break through that ceiling with a revolution, or you're going to go flat or maybe even close. But we teach five leadership rules, and you picked up on the biggest one. Is first is simplify. Yeah. Whenever you've got a problem, sit down and simplify it, right? And that's don't figure out how yet. Just talk about, well, how can we simplify this? The second one is delegate it. Mm-hmm. Who can do this best? Who loves doing this? Who's great at doing this? So simplify and delegate. And once we simplify and delegate, then what we want to do is begin to predict what's going to happen, right? And that's where process begins to happen. We're going to simplify, delegate, and then predict where we're going to be. When we do this, this is going to happen. This is where we want to go. Therefore, what's going to happen and help us get there? So simplify, delegate, predict, then systemize it. Yeah. Create that process. Watch, see what gets us there. What's the most effective thing? And make those processes, you know, evaluate those processes in terms of effectiveness and efficiency. So simplify, delegate, predict, systemize, and then once we systemize it, we can structure our organization to use those systems. And those five things will help companies break through that that ceiling every time, yep. Every time. So, wow, that's excellent. What have you learned in these 5 years from running your own business?
Wow, I've learned a lot. My head's spinning right now, right? I've learned a ton over the last 5 years. I think when I've learned a lot about myself, probably first, and that is when you're in business, you know, this isn't always easy for me, but be in touch with your emotions is sort of something you have to be aware of. And as a process technical guy, I don't always do that, but as you know, as I've hired employees, as we've, you know, when you've got those things going on, you've got to be aware of your employees, of yourself, of, you know, the impact that you're having on your clients and on all the stakeholders. And I think that's probably the biggest thing is just making sure to have all of that sort of in check and have self-awareness about it.
How do you get new clients? What is your marketing plan?
Yeah. So when I first started the company, most of my clients were very large multinationals. That's where I, you know, that was my history. And that's where I started. But what I really found was my passion is helping small to mid-sized companies, because you can see a very quick, immediate impact. And so we've really refocused our marketing strategy, where we've been doing webinars and even during COVID, we did a series of webinars called Contingency Plan Response, sort of the CPR. And I did that based on my time in the Philippines, where we actually had earthquakes and typhoons and flooding in the streets and poor infrastructure and disease. I got the mumps while we lived there. So it wasn't COVID, right? But we had contingency plans in place. And so we did a series of webinars about that. And now we do webinars about, you know, process documentation, and we do a lot of marketing through LinkedIn and things like that, just to reach out to folks who might be interested. I don't love being a salesperson. That's not my core personality, but I've found, you know, I really enjoy just let's put stuff out there and help people and share content and see what comes of it.
Well, let me give you permission to not be a salesperson. Right. I was a Sandler trainer for salespeople and sales management folks for 18 years. And what I had to do regularly is tell them they don't have to be salespeople. Yeah. All they really have to do is find somebody who has a need that they want to fix and then help them fix it. And sometimes that meant sending them someplace else. But nevertheless, you're building that relationship, that context of trust, where they're willing to talk to you about what they're struggling with, where their pain is, where they're feeling uncomfortable. They got a problem and they want to fix it.
That's right.
And if you will stick with them and stick with people that you find that way, you'll get plenty of business.
Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely what we found is when we find the right people who have a need for what we're selling, we don't have to sell. It sells itself and we just have fun.
A lot of people have this picture of selling means trying to get people to do something that they don't want to do. Mm-hmm. Right? Trying to get them to buy something they don't want to buy. Trying to get them to be something that they don't want to be. And that's hard work. That is very hard work. And I just want to give you the same kind of permission that I gave people for 18 years is you don't have to be a salesperson,
that's right.
Right? You just have to be somebody who enjoys being with people and can help them trust the context, trust that small ecosystem that you and they occupy enough so that they can share with you what their issues are. Yeah. And if they want to solve it and both of you believe that you can help solve it, you're going to get what we call business, yep. But you're also going to be helping people.
This is one of the things I love about our conversations, Will. I always feel like there's such wisdom that you share and with regards to, you know, these tidbits of information, but also the context of what we're talking about. So I really appreciate every time we talk, I always pull something away from it. So,
I really enjoy being with people. And, you know, it's interesting. 3 months ago, I was, I don't know, I wouldn't say I was in the dumps, but I felt the walls pushing in on me. Maybe it was the COVID constraints or something, but I just felt like, gee, I can't go out and stumble over people's feet. I can't meet strangers. I didn't know what to do. And then suddenly it dawned on me that what I wanted was to have conversations with people, right? Mm-hmm. Well, then the next step, when I asked, well, I want to have conversations with people, how would I do that? And then I realized I have over 11,000 people on my LinkedIn.
Wow.
Right? And I really hadn't done anything with LinkedIn, but I have 11,000 people on it. And I realized every one of those people are there because either they said, I want to talk with you, or I said, I want to talk with you.
That's right.
And you know, sometimes on LinkedIn, I get the feeling, you know, that they want to talk with me to sell me something, or they want to talk with me and I want to resist it. And then I internalize that. Well, they don't want to talk to me because I wouldn't want to talk to them, all that stuff.
Right.
So I just went back 90 days. If all the people who had a message to me and I wrote to them and said, gee, I put in LinkedIn, I said, you know, I put their name, and then I said, I'm really slow these days at responding to people on LinkedIn. A conversation with you would be awesome. If you'd like to talk, you can get on my calendar at calendly.com/Will Christ. Do you know that the week later, after I started that, the week later, I got my calendar filled up. I had five, at least five conversations every day. And yeah. and they've been great conversations. And I've even been able to solve people's problems. I've been able to help them find resources that they didn't know existed. And maybe I'll even get some business out of it. But the point is when I realized what I wanted to do was have conversations with people, yeah. the how bubbled up.
That's right. That's a great, great story.
Well, all right. So what would, you know, who you're looking for, small to medium businesses, who what, who want to?
Who have reached a point where they feel the pain that that not having well-documented processes is causing them problems. That's that, you know, they've reached that point where they'd like to have a discussion and see if this is the right fit. See if we have the right solution to enable them to be more successful, to be able to scale and grow and those types of things, and do it with some alignment of their team. That you know, if they're seeing the conflicts between departments and things like that, you know, sometimes it's because there's misalignment of processes. So those are the folks I'm looking to talk to, is, you know, people who feel that they've reached that point where they're, you know, they just need some clarity that about how their processes operate. We don't charge for the first call. We're happy to, you know, share with you what we've learned and kind of uncover that pain and see if there's a fit to support you.
Well, you know that in EOS, we have six key components of business that we think are necessary. We believe that those are strengthened, that lots of problems go away. In fact, every problem has to do with the root issue is a weakness in one of those six key components. And that's vision, people, data, issues, process, and traction. There are like 400 and soon there'll be 700 EOS implementers in the world. And every one of those, they get to between 15 and 25 clients in any given period of time. And it's about a 2-year journey. So they stick around for a while. Out of that, there are always companies when we ask them to document their core processes and make sure they're followed by all, there are companies out of that who need help. Yep. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to help introduce you to my clients and also to introduce you to those other implementers so that they can see how they can help their clients with a simple process. Mm-hmm. And your process is simple, 3 times, and then quarterly light checkups, and then an annual in a deep dive into how your processes are doing. But I'm going to introduce you to them because they need to have that resource, because as implementers, EOS implementers, we're not experts in any of those six components. We just know how to make it work. But when somebody wants more help, then we can bring in and introduce you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think it's interesting. That's actually kind of how I think you and I kind of got connected through. I've got a handful of customers who are currently EOS clients today. And I started learning about EOS from my clients. That what I started learning was that they were going through this EOS process. And that piece, a person would get the rock that says, get your HR processes documented and followed by all. And they'd say, all right, I'm looking for some help on that. And so I started getting these phone calls and referrals from folks. I appreciate that because I think people who are doing that EOS process, and you've articulated all those six components, you know, the ones who need help with the process piece of it, that's really where we've got experience stepping in and, you know, doing it in a simple and clean way. So I appreciate those introductions. That'd be great.
Good. So if people want to talk with you, how would they get in touch with you?
So if they go to our website, epszone.com, that's epszone.com, then right at the top of the page, it says book a strategy call. And similar to you, they can click on that link and they can schedule a 30-minute session on my calendar just to have an initial call. And we'd be happy to share with them whatever we can to make sure they're getting on the right path.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Ryan. This has been a lot of fun, and and open a lot of doors for me and turn a lot of lights on. So that's very helpful. I'm glad to have you on the Pilgrim on the 405. Make it a great day.
My pleasure. And thank you very much, Will. Appreciate
just
it.
Just one more example of how we can help businesses, and especially businesses in California, thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.